All right, hello and welcome. Today we've got Blake Ellis on the Back of the Net CISC Soccer Podcast. Blake is our Director of Goalkeepers for the South. Blake has a background as the student assistant at East Carolina University and then on to Chuan as a graduate assistant, where he got his master's in, is it coaching education, Blake?
Just education.
Okay. Yeah. He got his master's in education, and then he is currently the goalkeeping coach for a Division I school in South Carolina, Winthrop University, as well as, like I said earlier, our director of goalkeeping for the South Branch. So, Blake, welcome. I just wanted to have a chance to talk to a goalkeeper, learn a little bit about you. Yeah, it's exciting, man. This is the first goal creature we've had on the podcast, so yeah. I'm looking forward to it. You guys are a different breed. So, first and foremost, I want to see just a little bit about your background growing up in Eastern North Carolina, how you decided to get into coaching, and then we can dive into the goalkeeping specific position.
Yeah. So from a small town, Clinton, North Carolina, population, about 8,000. So very small town. It was a football town. So growing up, you know, there wasn't a lot of, obviously there wasn't a huge club. So just played on a small club team growing up. Luckily I had some really good coaches and kind of got inspired and wanted to be a soccer coach once I got in college.
Were you always a goalkeeper? Did you play in the field as well?
Growing up in like rec league, I played a little bit in the field, but probably around middle school is when I started just kind of experimenting in goal. And you know, I just love diving. I love shot stopping and obviously we're a weird breed. So not a lot of people like to take balls off the face, but no, it's something I enjoyed. I love the pressure about it. And obviously there's not a lot of running. So that's something I really like. But so once I got, middle school, really loved it. And high school, stuck with it. And went to a lot of college camps to try to get better. Obviously, small town, didn't have a goalkeeper coach. So I had to go to different college camps in the summer just to try to get better. And, with being in a small town, I didn't get the opportunity to get recruited that well. So didn't take the college route and play, just went to, ECU and played.
That's Eastern Carolina University for anybody that might not be familiar. I would imagine most people listening probably know, but just in case.
Yeah. East Carolina University.
Sorry. Thank you.
East Carolina. Yeah. East Carolina. So played club there. And then I knew I wanted to get in coaching. And like you said earlier, did the student assistant thing for 2 years and, loved the college aspect of it. I knew I wanted to get either in high school or college. First day of just being around college athletics I just fell in love with it. So, and then from there, became a graduate assistant at Chuan University, which is Division II school in North Carolina. And I was the goalkeeper coach there for the men's. And then now I'm the goalkeeper coach for the men and women at Winthrop, and then also the goalkeeper director for Charlotte Independence.
Yeah, fantastic. When you were at East Carolina, was Todd Herman the assistant coach on the women's program?
No, it was Brian Perman and Shay. What is Shay's last name? No. So
put you in spot.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Right. So Rob Donenworth, he was the head coach. And then Brian Perriman, he was the goalkeeper coach as well as the assistant, so I learned a lot under him. So,
okay, great. I think Todd might be at Western Carolina, so if he listens to this, apologies. the next piece. So soccer's that we talked about this with a couple others, particularly college soccer coaching is a small world. I did it for 12 years. I used to coach at Newberry College. When I was at Newberry, mm-hmm. we used to play Chuan about every other year. So we made the trip up there, and they came down. And I know Chris from when he was at Lees McRae, and I was working at Wofford College. So I just want to jump in there real quick. You know, a lot of times when we're talking to players, and you see it from both sides, you see it as the goalkeeping director for the club. And then you also see it from the college side when we're doing recruiting. There seems to be some misinformation or just maybe a lack of information about the different levels. So can you talk a little bit about the difference in terms of talent and teams for Division I, Division II, and if you've got any insight on Division III?
Not a lot of insight in Division III. The stigma is Division I, big schools, Power Five, has a lot of money, can't recruit anyone in the country. Division II is kind of the outsider teams. You don't really hear a lot about Division II teams, especially me, going through the recruitment process in high school. I had no idea who these Division II schools were that send me emails. But yeah, you know, the stigma is Division II schools aren't that great because, you know, they recruit lower level kids, but that's really not the case. Whenever I went to Division II or when I went to Chuan as a graduate assistant, I kind of went in blind, not knowing what the level was. You know, I looked at their record online and stuff like that, and they had a pretty good season this year I got there. And, but yeah, that first training session, it was just kind of just blew me away. I was like, oh crap.
He's not joking, folks. I know the players that they bring into Chuan, having coached against them, as well as some of the players that we brought in our teams and other teams at the Division II level. Yeah. So speak to that a little bit, 'cause I think that's probably going to be new information for a lot of people listening.
Yeah. So, on our roster, we had, it was probably 50-50 with, then we had like 12 internationals to 12 Americans, maybe a little more internationals. You know, mostly the starting lineup was 75% international players and the remainder were the American kids. The international guys, there's such a huge pool in Europe and Asia, just like anywhere. There's such a huge pool of great talent. And a lot of those kids want to come to America to, one, get a great education, to play at a high level. So it's not, you know, like I said, the stigma before is the only good players play Division I. No, that's not the case. We even played Division III schools, you know, preseason and in the spring, and there were some really, really good players there, even some American kids. So kind of harping on the American kids, there might be some kids who academically can't get into a Division I school, but they're an excellent soccer player. We had an All-American at Chuan. He was a forward for us, and he can't remember the exact number. He scored maybe 60 goals in a season, or maybe it was his career. I'm not sure.
Probably career. But either way, it's a ton of goals.
It makes more sense for being a career. But, you know, he was an All-American, and you know, he played in a big club, and, you know, we're lucky to have him. But so there's some really good American players that play at Division II level, become All-Americans, and I'm sure, I don't know the statistics, but I'm sure there's a lot that play in the professional right now. So that went through Division II and even Division III.
Yeah, particularly on the internationals, it can sometimes make it a little bit more difficult for the domestics, the U.S.-born players to get recruited in. And it's, you know, it's essentially, I'm going to butcher this, but it's essentially economics. There's a large supply of quality soccer players, particularly internationally, that really are interested in the product, an American education, and the ability to get it, you know, in this case, subsidized via scholarships, athletic and or institutional aid, whether that be, you know, financial based aid from the institution and or sort of the academic pedigree. If they're coming from a program and they've got good grades and good test scores and they're a good soccer player, you know, Division II and Division I have soccer scholarships, and there just happens to be a lot of players that have a high level background that are able to come over to the Division II level. I had a player that I recruited that played for me for 1 year at Newberry College. He had 5 caps on the U-17 national team for France, and then he got drafted in the first round by the San Jose Earthquakes. You know, so a top level player, one of the best players I've ever coached. And when I was out at Colorado School of Mines, we had an American placed player, played for Real Colorado, which is a big club in the country. And he got drafted. He got drafted in a supplemental draft to go play for FC Dallas, I think. I might be missing that, you know. And this is a kid with a, petroleum engineering degree, you know, so he had plenty of options. So he played on the reserve team for about a season. And then he said, okay, I'm going to go out and start working and making an actual salary. But yeah, the Division II level, if you haven't had a chance to go watch it, you need to go watch it, because there are some unbelievable players, and overall the talent is really close. And I'm sure when you were at Chuan, you probably scrimmaged some Division I teams, whether it be in the spring or maybe the preseason.
Yeah. We were close to Old Dominion. We went up there and, you know, we got a result from them. And we played some other Division I teams. I think we played Campbell a couple springs. And, you know, we competed with them, played UNCG. It's, you know, just comparing ourselves to Division I schools. And, you know, even though we didn't get a result, but we saw how we could compete with them, you know, gave us hope going into the fall. So, the level is, it's kind of all over the place in Division II. And, you know, the high level team in Division II can no doubt compete with a lot of Division I schools.
Yeah. So just from a recruiting standpoint, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into when you're picking that appropriate institution or where you want to go to school. But from the soccer side of things, it's definitely not scratched off the list because it's not Division One. You know, typically the best Division One teams are going to be better than the best Division Two teams. But even there's going to be a high level of parity on the men's side, particularly. You know, those best Division Two teams will probably be able to compete with almost all of those Division One teams, including some of those teams in the top 50. So it's from a soccer standpoint only, a competitive standpoint only. Don't scratch it off your list if that's what you're evaluating on, or at least part of your metrics for evaluating that on. All right. Yeah. Well, great. So what about Winthrop University? So you're there now, you're doing the goalkeeping. How long have you been there working for Daniel Ridenour?
Yeah. So I've been at Winthrop for 2 years working for, on the men and women's side, just with the goalkeepers. So, kind of a day in the life of the coach there. You know, we typically train in the morning times. You know, get there 30 minutes beforehand, or I've already have an idea in my head of what our topic's going to be. So in season, how kind of like to approach things is, say we're playing a team who, you know, we always look at, you know, the games that they played previous to us, and say they scored most of their goals by, playing the balls in from out wide. So a lot of crosses, a lot of balls played in wide areas. Then I'll work on some crosses, high balls, moving across goal, those type of things. If, you know, the team we're playing likes to drive down the middle and shoots from outside the box, then I'll do a lot of shot stopping from outside the box. So just different scenarios. And, you know, I always hit on their weaknesses. So if goalkeeper struggling with 1v1 situations, we'll cover that. You know, unfortunately, in the college game, you don't really have a lot of time to prepare when you're in season. You only get preseason. That's, you know, a week and a half to 2 weeks, but once the season starts rolling, you don't really have a lot of time to recover, and you know, you only have a few days in between. So that's why the spring is very important to me. You know, one, you get to hit the weight room a little bit more, you get to get bigger, faster, stronger, you know, get more fit, and then we get to work on a lot more technical things in terms of, you know, the goalkeeper side. So whether, you know, you need to clean up your handling, or, you know, your shot stopping, just your overall game can improve drastically in the spring. So
yeah, well, let's talk about that. Let's mention how the goalkeeping position may or may not be different from the field position. So you're in the weight room with one of your goalkeepers, and I'm sure you have a weight and strength and conditioning coach, but how is the goalkeeping position different from maybe a field position in terms of athleticism and what's being required, what type of movements, those types of things?
Yeah. So for me, footwork is massive. You know, this spring, what I was doing with our goalkeepers was I come up with several ladder drills, and I would time them. So during the week, so I think Monday, Wednesday, they would go, before we start goalkeeper training, they would go through their ladder drills as their warm up. And then on Friday, before we start training, I would time them in the same drills they've been working on. And just kind of, you know, I wasn't really wanting them to get a set time. I just want them to see that, you know, by them working on this stuff, their footwork is improving. Because I think footwork is massive in terms of being a goalkeeper. You know, just getting to the right areas, being in the right position, you're going to give yourself to make a save.
All right. So specifically, footwork is your ability to move across your goal area, and that's gonna what's that gonna provide for the goalkeeper, for somebody listening at home?
Well, I mean, just not really trying to overthink it. You know, if you can get to an area, get to the position where you need to be as quick as you can, and then you can think about your hands, think about your body shape, think about your weight on your feet. So getting to an area where you need to be, then you can make a save. You can start thinking about other things. So again, you know, footwork is key for me. Going to talking about like strength and conditioning stuff, I like for my goalkeepers to be in somewhat of good shape. I don't expect them to be number one in the beep test, but, you know, at least compete. And when it comes to, you know, hitting the weight room, a lot of lower body explosive stuff. I don't care if you squat 300 pounds. I just need you to be explosive when claiming a ball in the air, or knocking players off the ball when you're in the box, you know, moving players out of the way. So.
Yeah, we're as a field player is going to have to be explosive, and also, you know, a combination of explosiveness and sort of an endurance athlete, a punctuated sort of endurance or punctuated sort of explosive athlete. the goalkeeping position, you know, is pretty much footwork, movement, waiting for your opportunities, and then having to be more explosive. So it sort of errs on the side, and correct me if you see it differently, but it sort of errs on the side of being a more explosive type athlete, the ability to get to a spot quickly and then, you know, make that action. And that action is definitely going to be shooting through or diving or, you know, just being strong in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. You know, if your goalkeepers winning your beep test, then that's awesome for you and your goalkeeper. That's probably not the best sign for the field players.
No, not at all.
I mean, you do get the freaks in the position athletically, so it's not to say that it isn't happened, but particularly as they get older, that sort of subset of skills is a little bit different. Well, let me change here. So we're going to jump into the younger ages here. What kind of player should be a goalkeeper, or how do you know if your son or daughter, you know, sort of has an aptitude? When does this start? What are we looking for? What kind of kids make the best goalkeepers as they get into the high school age groups?
Yeah. So basically how I have it set up as a director for the club is I won't, kids to kind of make their decision by, you know, age 12, 13, whether they want to, you know, take being a goalkeeper full time. So from U8 to U12, U13, basically just fundamentals of the game, just catch the ball, you know, talking about, you know, smothers and baskets and all that, just making your basic routine saves. Then once you get to the teenage years, 13, 14, 15, so then we could talk a little bit more tactics, you know, get a little more technical and talk about angles, crosses, all those types of things. And then once you get 16, 17, 18, then we can kind of cover basically everything. But as a goalkeeper, I think being the most fundamentally sound as possible is you're going to be most effective. So yeah, it's great and all that you can make these crazy saves and, you know, you can, you know, just, you could touch me, make a save up or 90. That's great and all, but can you make the routine saves? Because 80% of the time in games, you're going to face a ball that's a routine save, whether it's a smother, a scoop, basic handling, it's a collapse dive. You're going to face those. The other 20%, then you're going to have to make those crazy saves. So I'd rather 80% of their time, you be fundamentally clean and be able to make those routine saves. And then we can work on the other 20%.
Yeah. Have you heard of the idea? And this was something my college coach used with me, so it might not be widespread, but sort of the risk versus safety aspect as you kind of move up the layers of the field. Have you heard of this risk safety idea before?
Yeah. What do you mean? Like, the farther you go up away from your goal, you might get chipped. Is that
No, sorry. I'm talking about, so, you know, the goalkeeper and the back line and then the midfield line and then the forward line. Mm-hmm. And basically the idea is, you know, you need your forwards to take more risk, you know, because what they're trying to do is score a goal. And typically in the game of soccer, that's going to require a little bit more being on the front foot and creating situations. And, you know, if a forward loses a ball because he took a risk, it's not going to hurt you as much. And then you come into the midfield and sort of that risk and safety is balanced. You know, if you're playing the six, you're leaning more towards safety. If you're playing the 10, you're leaning more towards taking risk. And then the back line. And then when you get to the goalkeeper, you know, it's almost always safety first, right? Your job is to keep the ball out of the back of net, to have, as you said, strong fundamentals. And what I think of is, you know, the further you are, or closer you are to your goal, further back you are, closer to your goal, that consistency is really important. You know, I want my forwards to be able to make magic happen. And if they can't do it all the time, that's to be expected. But if I've got a goalkeeper, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, if I've got a goalkeeper that can take one out of top ends or, you know, just make an unbelievable save, but is not making the saves that he's supposed to be making, I'm going to put the goalkeeper in that is consistent, that makes the save he's supposed to make every time. And, you know, maybe never gets that chance to make that save that you don't expect them to make. So just kind of wondering how that fits in for this risk safety or consistency argument.
Yes. I mean, obviously being a goalkeeper is a psychological, it's probably one of the most psychological positions on the field. You know, you may sit there for 85 minutes and not touch the ball. And then the last 5 minutes of the game, you're getting shots left and right. So you have to be mentally engaged the whole time. For me, I always tell my goalkeepers, if you don't make a save in the game, you've done your job, because your community.
Oh yeah, yeah. Jump into that, because a lot of younger goalkeepers, they think it's just shot stopping, right? And you talk about that being the fundamentals, but yeah, explain how not making a save is meaning the goalkeeper's done their job.
Yeah. So if I'm communicating with my back line and I'm keeping everything organized and I'm, you know, making sure everyone's marked up in the box, you know, I'm making sure everyone needs to be where they need to be positionally and they're making saves for me. But, you know, if there's a shot at the top of the box and my center back gets a foot on it, I've done my job because I got that center back in the position where he needs to be. So again, if I don't have to make a save in the game and, you know, shots are flying over the goal and, you know, nothing's on frame, then I've done my job because I kept everything organized in front of me. Yeah, it's cool to make, you know, the game winning save or a 1v1 save and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, if you don't have to make a save and you draw 0-0, you've done your job. Now it's the 10 other players on the field to do their job, you know. So that's kind of my approach on things. And at the college level, when we play small-sided, I'm always sitting behind the goal and seeing what type of feedback my goalkeepers are giving to their back line. And I think that's huge. And, you know, I record them all the time and then we watch film and I'm like, hey, look, in this situation, you got to say this type of phrase or be a little more specific. Being as specific as possible when you're communicating with your back line is, you know, is very, very, very important. I'd rather not have to make a save in the game because I've done my job.
Yeah, the goalkeeping position, it's more than just making the saves, right? It's the footwork to be in the right position, making the tactical decisions, whether that be yourself putting yourself in the right position and reading the play, organizing the players in front of you. You know, it's definitely the ability or the technique in terms of footwork as well as making the saves. And then really organizing that box in front of you. How much can you control and how much can you use your teammates to prevent yourself from being in the position where you directly aren't going to be able to make the save because the guy's in on a breakaway, you know, or the guy gets a free header from 7 yards out and you're not able to get to it because he's unmarked and we allowed the cross to come in the box. Yeah, that's a huge part of the goalkeeping position. I think you can maybe explain that, like, when you're recruiting. So if you're going to go out and watch and recruit a goalkeeper, What kind of categories are you using to evaluate him, or what kind of metrics are you using to evaluate that high school or club soccer player?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I want to notice is communication. And, you know, if I'm watching if I'm at a club event and, you know, I'm watching a goalkeeper and he's just not saying anything, you know, not providing any communication, I'm just going to move on. Because you're not going to get my attention. I'm not drawn into you because you're not keeping things organized. And that's just the type of coach I am. There may be other goalkeeper coaches out there that, you know, if they stick around a little bit longer, he may make some unbelievable saves. Well, the college level, at a high level, you're going to need to have a goalkeeper who wants to have, you know, who needs to keep their back line organized. So for me, you know, I stick to the goalkeepers who, one, they get my attention when they're talking to their back line, they're keeping everything organized. Then I'll watch and see how the shot stuffing going. I'll see how they deal with crosses, how they deal with, you know, 1v1 situations. So that's why at, you know, recruiting events, whenever I'm, well, I guess for as the director, whenever I'm telling my, you know, 16, 17, 18s who are preparing for college camps, that's what you need to do. You're going to get coaches' attentions if you're communicating and you're yelling and you're, you know, providing information. Now, what you can provide the information, but make sure it's detailed. Don't just scream stuff that doesn't make sense, right?
Give an example of that, because you hear this from goalkeepers all the time. They love the position. They want to be engaged. They know this is important. You know, not necessarily wrong communication, but give some examples of communication that is effective, concise, and maybe some communication pieces that they might want to try to avoid.
Yeah, so just the basic stuff, like avoid saying, like, you could say step up, but I hear it all the time, like, get him, who's going to get him, you know, be specific, always put a name to it. So if your center back is Johnny and Johnny's close to the ball, say Johnny step, Johnny shift, shift left, shift right, drop back, you know, always put a name to it. Every once in a while you just hear goalkeepers say, like, you know, make a tackle or, you know, keep them out wide. But, you know, if there's two defenders next to the ball, then, like, who, right? So, yeah, just when goalkeepers aren't specific in what they want their defenders to do or what they want their players to do, then it's just kind of like, you know, it's you know, after a while, your back line is just going to hear you talking, but they're not going to pay attention to you. So you got to put a name on it. Always put a name on it.
Yeah, you're in charge back there. At the end of the day, it's your responsibility to make sure those balls don't go in the back of the net, and you need to use the players in front of you. One of my favorites, it makes sense, right? But when a goalkeeper talks more about what the forwards are doing in the attacking third than he does talking about what the center backs are doing when he's fielding crosses, right? You know, your job is to play in front of you. In that 18, you should definitely be communicating and organizing your center backs defensively more than you should be yelling 70, 80, 100 yards down the field to a forward to have a shot or find a pass. And, you know, it's just human nature. That part's pretty exciting. And when it's in front of your goal mouth, you're kind of focused in on the piece. But I find that to be a pretty good cue for goalkeepers. Let's focus on what we can control and let the attacking players do what they want. You could talk to them at halftime or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Great. Well, let's shift here. So we're obviously in the shelter in place, halfway through the podcast now, but today is Thursday, April 23rd. What are goalkeepers doing at home? You know, I know they've got a technical curriculum, for the club as a whole. We've got an Exos sports conditioning. So there's different work, and most likely coaches are sending them information, but how is a goalkeeper different, and what should be some things that they're focusing on right now when they're not able to play 11v11 or 6v6 type soccer games?
Yeah, so the goalkeeper staff with the club has gotten together, and we created a curriculum. So that's a PowerPoint presentation for different drills that they can go on the website and look at. So now our next phase is that we're another goalkeeper coach and myself we went to the field, and we have video sessions that we're going to provide for the kids. So I think starting next week, we have 5 different sessions, and the idea is we're going to send the training session out, have the kids perform it, and then later that week have a Zoom call. And during that Zoom call, if the kids are able to go outside and perform it in front of us, we can do that, or we can just talk just goalkeeper stuff like you and I are doing now. So we can, you know, we can cover a topic, crosses, you know, we can talk about, you know, different things, you know, where to be in the cross, you know, the technical aspect of it, like, you know, the correct leg you use, all those types of things. So there's topics we're going to cover in the Zoom call. We just want to stay engaged. I think the biggest thing is right now that a lot of these kids are probably thinking that their coach is kind of not, you know, just kind of off, not doing it, doing anything, and not thinking about them. But we're just coming up with ideas and different ways to, you know, try to stay involved as much as we can, because, you know, we're all new to this. Like, this is the first time I've ever had the, you know, coach online. I call it e-gaffing. So it's a new term.
Is that for email, like electronic mail, but electronic gaffing? For those that don't know, gaffer is sort of like the boss. It's a European English term for coach.
Yeah. So e-gaffing. we're all new to this, and we're coming up with different ideas, and I've listened to some podcasts.
That's gotta be a Daniel Ridenour, Phil Heinsohn term. Did you pick up gaffer from over at Winthrop?
it's definitely a Phil Heinsohn word. Yeah. So that's the idea. We're going to send out video training sessions to the kids, and then we're going to have Zoom meetings with them, and, you know, just kind of stay in touch. And I think the biggest thing now is I've talked to a few goalkeepers in the club. The work you put in now is going to show off in the fall. It's going to, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of kids right now who are just, once they finish their homework, they're just going to play Fortnite all day. And they're not going to go outside and have any touches on the ball. So, you know, just trying to stay connected with them, motivate them, try to make sure they stay involved, and, you know, stay as fundamentally sound as possible. So, you know, it doesn't take a lot of equipment to have, you know, goalkeeper training by yourself. You just need a ball and a wall. You know, mom or dad can go out there with you. So they're very simple drills that are effective.
Yeah, I would think, being a goalkeeper during this time is probably going to be the best position if you were actually trying to maintain and improve your ability, because everybody can work on the technical part. And for a soccer player, the technical part is incredibly important. The ball mastery, those are the things that you can do better by yourself. But the footwork for being a goalkeeper and the ability to be explosive, and, you know, if you really only need one person to volley the ball, hopefully mom or dad or brother or sister can do that for you. You can get a lot of power from a short distance, so they're going to be able to also do the shot stopping. But yeah, I think if you put your time in and you train during this time being a goalkeeper, you can actually come back maybe even better in terms of just the physical ability to cover the range that you're able to cover, the footwork that you're able to cover. And then it's up to your coach and the goalkeeping directors to kind of push you in the right direction. You know, if you're not kind of taking the appropriate line, or your decision-making and your starting position isn't where it needs to be based off of play, those things are things that the coaching staff can add to it. But just that base level of how well can you move, how explosive are you, how many reps are you getting in, you could probably get a lot of that in right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
good. Well, last thing, let's talk just real quick, because this is probably my favorite topic. Goalkeepers are different, like you said earlier, and we talked about in the beginning of this podcast, you know, and if you go watch a high school game, you go watch a club game, go watch a college game, you know, you look up into the stands and you see the parents that are sitting off by themselves. Those are typically the moms and dads of the goalkeepers. The position, like you said, is a psychological difference than the rest of the position played. So what is the mindset of a goalkeeper? What are some challenges and what are some areas for them to focus on, or just what makes them tick? Like what's in the brain of one of these goalkeepers?
Yeah, I would say the mindset you need to have in training and in a game is you got to realize you're going to make mistakes. You're going to, you know, even the best goalkeepers in the world, you know, the USA England game, the World Cup, where what was the goalkeeper, Green? You know, Clint Dempsey scored that.
England's number one.
Yeah. So yeah. Right. So that. You know, Clint Dempsey scored that easy goal, and that was the easiest save any goalkeeper can make. So you got to realize you're human. You're going to make mistakes, even in games. You got to have a next play mentality. So listen, that play happened. You got scored on. How can you improve of it? You know, just forget about it. Go on to your next play. So that's why I try to teach goalkeepers. You know, listen, it may be 1-1 or 1-0, and you're up, and you know there's 10 minutes left, and you get scored on. Well, you still have 9 minutes to play. Don't make another mistake, you know, improve on it, try it. So, and, you know, we'll watch film. We'll see what you did wrong, and let's not let that mistake, you know, happen again. But yeah, you know, being a parent of a goalkeeper, I'm sure it's not fun. You know, I was actually talking to my mom about this. She's like, yeah, when you were playing, you know, every time when the ball came close to you, I just didn't really want to watch, because, you know, the 10 players on the field can make, you know, 100 mistakes, but if you make a mistake as a goalkeeper, it's going to cost you the game. And I think that's kind of why I like the position so much, is, you know, all the pressure is on you. You can be either a hero or, you know, the evil guy, you know, so you can win the game for your team, or you can lose the game for your team. And yeah, it's definitely a weird position based on all the other ones, but yeah, that's why I love it.
Yeah, you got to be mentally tough, and you got to want that challenge. You got to want that pressure. And I think in some ways it's for those goalkeepers that stick with it and it fits into their personality type and they really take it on board. I think sometimes it could be more difficult for the parents, because they aren't the one out there with that mentality. Not to say they don't have that type of mentality, but when they're watching their kid play and they know it's all on them, and if they make one mistake in the game, it could cost, and it's a bit harsh, but just to make the point, it could cost the team a goal that could end up being the deciding factor. And, you know, you got a forward or even a center back that is going to make at least one mistake a game typically, and it's probably not going to have the effect of having a goal. You know, center backs occasionally can make one mistake, and that could be the difference. But for the most part, that there's a lot riding on the goalkeeper, and you're right, it makes them engaged. It's a different psychological pressure. And for the kids that like that, then, you know, maybe a goalkeeper is the right position to play. Blake, anything else you want to add? This is, feel free to throw anything out there, push anything that you guys have been doing with the club, or, you know, just kind of sign us off.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for having me. But no, I mean, I think we're trying to build a culture here in the club, and we want to kind of get out of the stigma of, you know, goalkeepers are just, you know, that the worst player on the field, just throw them in goal. We want goalkeepers to be the best player on the field and the most effective. So, you know, every week, you know, when I start goalkeeper training, I always ask the kids, you know, how'd you do? Do you succeed in goals? You know, what, you know, just, so I'm trying to be as consistent as possible to just create a culture. And I think that's the biggest thing. Once you create a culture in the club, then you can start seeing things happening and just kind of get everybody on board. So, but yeah, so I think that's all I got. But goalkeeper union, as always.
Great. Well, guys, that's Blake Ellis, our director of goalkeeping for the South. Blake, enjoyed the conversation. Really appreciate it. And hopefully some goalkeepers or parents of goalkeepers out there find some value. And that is it for us. Thanks, guys.